and welcome to Horror After Hours. I am once again here with my good friend Mike Weston. We're here at Budden Street Brewery.
Hey, yeah, welcome. I mean, I'm excited to be here.
Mike is the, I want to say, assistant brewmaster. He is...
lots of different fun titles to go along with what I do. Easiest way to think about it is the production manager down here at Budden Street Brewing. I'm responsible for making the beer, a lot of the inventory, coordinating a lot with the taproom manager, and making sure that we have enough beers available for people to come in, and they're not boring beers. Make sure that they're rotated through enough that people can get excited about it, because yeah. I get excited every time I make it, and I feel like everybody should be that excited when they drink it.
And I gotta tell you, the ads, it's a perfect beer. At this point, this beer is the best you've got on tap.
Yeah, because I don't have the Belgian Blonde on out there.
Well, now, we had kind of touched a little bit earlier today about some of the other beers that are coming down the pike.
Yeah.
Now, can you elaborate a little bit? Or
I can
is
talk
still
about
kind
some of,
a, of
them.
Is this still a trade secret?
Some of them I'm not going to go into too much detail about. We do have a couple of new Saisons that we're working on.
You said you have a mosaic coming, right? The same mosaic that was out?
So right now we've got the Shut Up Donna in the fermenter, as well as the Shut the F Up Donna. So we can do a side-by-side comparison, or, you know, our customers coming in can come in and taste what the Shut Up Donna originally was, and then how we intensified it.
Now, the Shut the Fuck Up Donna was amazing. I gotta say, that is... right up there with the ads, right up there with the Boss Triple IPA.
For a beer that's habitually above 10%, and the amount of hops that we throw into there, it is such an easy drinking beer that it's scary.
Yeah, it is. The ads is very much the same, because it has just the right amount of bitter, it has just the right amount of sweet, and it's not overdone in any way, and the flavor just... It's a very clean and simple beer.
There's nothing overly complicated about it. It's extremely well balanced.
Yes.
You get a touch of, it's a drier Saison in comparison to what you would traditionally call a Saison. Something that's a little bit more akin to like our Mosaic, Mandarina, Paradigm, things along those realms. The Hook Tender and the Ad Saison, both of those are designed to be extremely dry. We actually make it a point to dry it out. Part of how you do that is you incorporate more, basically you add some degree of sugar during the boil kettle, or during the boil.
And we talked about this a little bit on last week's episode, where that the way you change the taste is what time you add the sugar.
Oh
right?
Yeah, part of it. You can adjust different flavor profiles in so many different ways. I mean, there's some basic ingredients in every beer. I mean, you've got the water, you've got the grain, malt, barley. That's how you're going to get the wort or the sugar water that turns into beer. And then you've got hops, which act as a preservative as well as a bittering agent. If you add it later on to the boil, it doesn't have a chance to fully isomerize. And so you're only releasing some of the more floral notes of it. So you'll get a little bit more of, you know, say it's a the Mandarina Bavaria hop, for example, has a really tangerine orange kind of flavor profile to it. And if we were to add that later on to the boil, you get more of that orange tangerine flavor and not so much the bitter aspect of it. And then you can also add things like, you know, orange peel, lemon, various spices, whether it's coriander, some people do cinnamon, and then if you're going to introduce sugar, there's
star anise would actually go really well with say like the ads.
So
just a
I'm gonna say no. I don't like black licorice, and every time that
I don't either, but sometimes if you add a little bit of star anise, just it doesn't take much.
Well, and it's funny that you say that, because we do make a holiday beer called the Beer de Noël.
The reason why
I say that is we use 9 different added ingredients to it. Instead of like coriander, we look at things like star anise. We look at, you know, basically any spices that's going to instantly bring out the holiday
okay,
flavor.
So you got, you
that's
would have
what I want.
Star anise. You would have a little bit of cumin, a little bit of clover.
Had the clover.
Cumin, and we don't have to get into
I would say
specifics.
Cumin wasn't in there. That would give you a little bit more of a meaty flavor. And the problem with that I have with cumin being added to beers is if certain beers are infected, you'll get a meaty esters or aroma with that. And and if you're bare, if you're hiding it and trying to, I guess, get that meaty flavor, I'm thinking you're trying to get a bad beer.
That's instantly where my mind goes to.
You're gonna
end up with a totally different flavor. So now I'm understanding where this is going.
There's other off flavors. Like if you ever get a beer that tastes a lot like a green apple, and it's not flavored to be a green apple, there's a problem with that beer.
Good to know.
I'm just saying that beer's already turned, and you might want to ask, hey, let somebody know.
This wasn't supposed to be a sour.
No, this was not supposed to be a cider. You know, but there are certain off flavors that, you know, you kind of want to be careful when you're adding different adjuncts because you don't want to hide those flavors.
Yeah, you want your flavors to be pronounced and crisp.
And one of the things that we had actually learned out with the Beer de Noël is depending on what those adjuncts are, because you're basically using a bunch of different baking spices, or what you would consider baking spices, to go into a beer for that particular one. And just like hops, if you let it sit there longer, those flavors start to change.
If you let it sit too long, that's gonna
The star anise is a prime example. The longer that sat, the more pronounced that became.
And it can become overpowering because that is such a strong flavor.
Yes, and
even just one little star anise can change the entire flavor profile of anything you add it to. Not just beer, but if you're using it in baking, you're using it for making a sauce, you can totally mess it up if you add just a
easily,
hair too much.
Easily.
It's that intense.
Well, and then you got to remember, we're dealing it at a scale of 155 gallons at a time, and we can't necessarily always taste it. You know, once it's kegged up, I put it to a side. And the only way that I'm going to be able to test that keg is to hook it up.
Yep.
And so we're not always able to test it like we'd like to, or as often as we'd like to. Hell, if I could, I'd keep everything in a fermenter, and we'd go straight from the fermenter to the taps.
That would be awesome. That's an ideal world there.
Yeah, that is an ideal world. It's also not ideal because I don't want to deal with cleaning those lines.
But you would have to have it at a where it would run through a coolant system.
Now, so there are breweries, and I wish I could remember the name of, there are special tanks like that are fermented and basically pumped right into a holding tank inside the inside a cooler, and it'll get pumped from that holding tank straight to on tap. I want to say there's a brewery up in Anchorage. Cynosure, I believe is what it is.
There's a lot of breweries up there. They have some pretty incredible brews, and
they've got some decent ones up there.
They got some good stuff. My favorite, of course, I've talked about it in the past, was Lazy Mountain Brewing.
Yep.
They change their stuff every time they make a new beer. It's a different number. They don't actually name the beers, they give it a number. Like Lazy Mountain 55 was my absolute favorite.
I like that idea primarily because there's times that, you know, so we have, I guess, names for, I'm just going to throw a number out there, maybe a dozen or so, you know, beers. We've got names for them.
Well, they become,
but they
so
all have stories to go along
with
it.
Exactly, like the Shut Up Donna.
Yes. Or
the Shut Up Donna is the prime example because
Kyle's fucked up stout.
Okay. Now, people have asked me in the past, what is the Shut Up Donna? Can you explain the story?
Shut Up Donna.
Hey, welcome back to Horror After Hours. We, not sure what happened, but we had a little bit of a technical difficulty, and the recording kind of cut off in the middle of our conversation, so...
I blame gremlins. Gremlins typically do it.
Gremlins will do that. So, what we're going to do... I'm just going to continue our conversation where we had left off. We have no idea where we were
Nope, but we'll figure it out somewhere down the line.
So
during that little break, one of the things that I was able to do was let you sample one of the beers that we have coming out. It's a wheat wine.
This is one that's coming down the pike, and this thing is amazing. I got to tell you, I'm just tasting a warm version,
it's not carbonated
version of this, and this thing is amazing. Oh my God.
I mean, well, so what you tasted is what I would consider the raw product.
Yes.
I haven't carbonated it. I haven't harvested the yeast out of it. We actually need to discuss probably tomorrow whether or not we want to add anything to it. Maybe there's another adjuncts.
I wouldn't add anything to it because it has.
So you say that now. I don't know if you can taste it. There are some fusel alcohols in there. You'll get a little bit of that sharp alcohol taste right up front.
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit of the burning going down.
I like that though.
Yeah, I mean, we can age that out. That is actually the only way to get
but
rid of
it. That would make it a little scary because if you don't feel that you not knowing you're drinking something that strong.
Have you seen our ABVs? Most of the time you can't tell that you're drinking something that's
now,
a high octane beer.
Now what do we say? 90% of your menu was Imperial?
Pretty close. pretty close. As a matter of fact, the Mosaic Saison that we've got going on right now, if everything goes right, that should be over an 8% beer itself, and that's a normal Saison.
Now, you said in the last episode, anything above a 9% is an Imperial, right?
So, I went back through and I did a little bit further looking at that, just because those were numbers that I haven't looked at in about 2 years. And there's a little bit of mixed messages going throughout the brewing
community.
Okay,
so there's no solid ground.
There's no set, you know, hey, this is the threshold. It is become one of those terms that is used like a double or triple IPA. It's used as an identifier, something that brewers can say, okay, this one's got a bigger ABV, it's got a bolder flavor, it's, you know, a step above what our normal would be. Mm-hmm. But the more and more I see Sean's recipes, the more and more I don't know what normal is anymore. So a 5% beer, I'm like, oh, that's cute. I mean, most of our beers are upwards of 7+.
Now, you guys do actually have an non-alcoholic.
So, yes, we do have a root beer currently that is a non-alcoholic, and we do have a couple other ideas of introducing more non-alcoholic options. We're still kind of in a research phase on that because we don't want to put out a product that doesn't, I guess, represent the quality that we put into our beers. I mean, we understand it's a non-alcoholic product, but we also want it to have that same balance. We want it to have the same, you know,
the
kind of unique, fresh flavor that comes along with whatever style we end up going with. There's been, I mean, a variety of things that have been thrown out, various kinds of sodas. We've had some customers coming in and making requests, and while I don't necessarily jump on those requests right away, I do put things on the back burner, and, you know, there was...
Please take it into consideration.
Yeah, I mean, I never rule out the possibility of anything. I'll throw it onto... I've actually got a growing list of flavor profiles that I'd like to see in a beer. And, or, you know, when we get a new hop, Cashmere is a prime example. What can I do with this new hop? What beer styles would it go with? What other blends with other hops would fit really well with this flavor profile? And then let's mix it up. Mm-hmm. You know, for a while we had talked about doing various styles that you wouldn't typically expect. The bread IPA. Just going off of something we've done already, we wanted a tropical IPA, but we also wanted to introduce Brettanomyces, which is a wild yeast. And so as an experiment, we just started throwing in a lot of, I say a lot because it's an IPA, but quite a few different, I want to say there's 5 different hops that blend in that beer, on top of it being dry hopped, that give it such unique characteristics that from a brewer's perspective, that's what I want. I want something unique that drinks really easy and appeals to a fairly large audience. I don't want, I know it's not going to appeal to everybody. I'm cool with it not appealing to everybody. We make a very good stout that I still is not my go-to beer. It's just not my style.
Now, we talk about the stout. You're talking about the Boom Boat, right?
Yep.
The Boom Boat. I don't typically like a lot of stouts. I'm not that big on having that much coffee flavor or that much dark beer. But the Boom Boat, for some reason, just really resonated with me because it has... what do you call it? This is, it's got a nice balance. It's not overdone. It's,
balance is key.
Balance is the key.
Balance is probably one of the biggest things that...
It can be a strong imperial beer without being overdone.
Absolutely. And that's one of the hardest things that I see when I'm making beer is with dark beers, you can't necessarily see the difference.
Yeah.
I can make something just as dark and have it not nearly as in balance as, say, you know, what's a good example? All right, looking at the difference between the Mark IV and the Mark V. Both of those are IPAs, one's a double black IPA. There's an addition of one grain, and you're talking like, I want to say it's only like 5% of this grain bill is this dark grain, and it drastically changes the flavor profile. Because it sends the balance into a completely different realm.
Now, I like the Mark IV because it is such a gentle beer.
Yes.
It is a beer that's actually really easy to drink. Not overdone. Now, the Mark V, I like that one because it had such bold flavors. It had a nice, strong, hoppy flavor to it on top of the chocolate and the coffee flavor.
So the darker grain that we use in there actually kind of mutes down some of the hop flavors, which makes some other aspects of the hops pop out more. And sometimes that's what you're doing is it's not that the flavor's not there. We're just going to mask it with something that's a little bit stronger. Now we have talked about doing a variety of different beers, and I know actually last week I think we had talked about some of the differences between porters and stouts. Have fun looking that one up. There is such a huge argument in what a porter is and what a stout is, and then you start going into what's an Irish stout, English stout, a Baltic porter. You can break this down to so many different ways. You know, what's a milk stout versus a normal, what I would consider, say an English stout.
Okay, just curiosity, how many different types of beer are there? You got the, we got the Saison, we got the IPA, we've got the stouts, we've got, just so, ballpark, give me this.
So I have this fun little app on my phone.
Okay, I want to hear this.
And what this is called is a BJCP droid. What that stands for is the Beer Judging Competition Program.
I like this.
What that is, and there are a lot of these different apps on there. I believe the most recent one, the version I have is like a 2015, 2018. They don't update every year with all the new with all the new beers. But going through this, they are showing 34 different styles of beers. And every single one of those have anywhere from 2 to 15 subset beers.
Holy shit.
So, like, take a stout, for instance. Mm-hmm. We just went through those. I mean, you've got an English stout, you've got an Irish stout, you've actually got an American stout, and then you start going into milk stouts. And, you know, there are so many different offshoots of that. And then this is where the craft really comes into craft brewing is... All right, so we'll take the Baltic Porter. All right, typically it's a really roasted flavor, lighter on the IBUs. You'll get a lot of those chocolate notes in there, and having
almost the smoke flavor to it as well. Almost.
It's... Almost. I can see that.
Yeah.
But you've got the beer judging competition program gives you, hey, this is what the traditional standard is. This is roughly how dark it is. It's going to be in between. you know, SRM is basically a scale that tells you how dark your beer is or what color it is. And we'll say, just shooting a number out there, we'll say this is supposed to be anywhere from a 15 to a 35, somewhere in that dark range.
Yeah.
And again, those, I'm not even looking at the scale. Those numbers are so far off. But it'll say, you know, it's typically within this range of how dark it's supposed to be. As long as your beer falls within there, yeah, it's within the standards. You're using so much roasted malt in there. Your IBUs, your ABV, it'll kind of give you a rough guidelines of what they traditionally are. Now, you can take that same exact idea and go down to Portland, Oregon, and give that concept to one of their brewers, drastically different beer.
Yep.
Same exact style, drastically different beer.
Now, I talked about this a little bit in the past too, was you could give the same exact recipe to 10 different chefs,
yeah,
and you would have 10 different dishes that would come out.
Oh, absolutely.
Anything can change the flavor profile, whether it's the humidity in the room, the temperature in the room,
the temperature of the water. You're talking about the acidity of the water, whether or not it's basic. Yeah,
a pinch of a seasoning, it changes everything.
And then you want to talk about different strains, yeast strains. So say that you've got, just throwing something out there, San Diego Super. It's a really common yeast strain. White Labs makes and sells a metric ton of it. But say you're using a second or third generation. It's a little bit more robust. It'll clear up a little bit more. It'll do its job a little bit quicker because they already got rid of all the crappy yeast cells during the last run.
As each generation comes,
exactly,
it gets a little more refined.
Although there is a certain point where the more generations that you use, you'll start getting mutations because you're basically dealing with an organism that has a finite world of reproducing. There's only so many other yeast cells that it can, you know, sit there and reproduce. And,
yeah,
and at a certain point, you start getting these mutations, and those mutations cause off flavors. So for us, like, anything beyond a fifth generation, I get rid of. There's no point. We've gotten our bang out of it, you know. And if I use it past that, I'll get a similar beer, but I'll start getting some of these little, slightly off flavors that I don't want in the beer. And I mean, that's something that a lot of people at home can do with their home brewing too, is reusing the yeast, repitching it. I mean, there are fun steps that you can do if you really nerdy enough to sit there and clean out your yeast and cultivate it back up, and it's a headache.
That sounds like a major process.
You have to be very nerdy and very attention to detail to do that. I want one of those labs here, by the way.
That says a lot about you.
One day. I get really nerded out about some of these things.
And that's one of the cool things. This is why I've been wanting to chat with you about all this stuff, because I know that this stuff is in your head.
It is. And a lot of this stuff just kind of floats around. And I always stop, at least once a week, stop and wonder, if all this stuff's bouncing around in my head, I feel bad for Sean, because he has all this bouncing around in his head and then some. And I can see why he's constantly coming up with ideas that are like, I don't know, sometimes they work, sometimes they don't, sometimes we do it, sometimes we don't. It just, yeah.
But the cool thing is that I'm able to sit here and talk about the guy who does a lot of the backbreaking work.
Yeah. Well, I don't do the backbreaking stuff anymore. Kyle has picked up a lot of that. Thanks, Kyle.
Big no. Shout out to Kyle here.
Yeah, so when I first started, it was actually funny because I got this job because it was job number 3 while I was trying to pay for my wedding.
Now, I talked about this last week too, was that I met you when you were first starting.
Yeah, I
told you then that I wanted to interview you, and you said,
I don't know. Yeah, at that point in time. So I came in, somebody had told me about Sean wanting to hire somebody in the back, and I'm like, all right, I've got two jobs. I've got, you know, so much time every day that I can do this. So I stopped in, and if you haven't been to the brewery, we have this giant window that goes from the tap room that looks into the brew house. Sean was in the brew house, and I wrote something like help with a question mark, and I put a napkin behind it. So that way it read like it was a sign. And he's like, yeah, come on back. So I came back here, and you know, we talked for about 15 seconds. Like, great, you can start tomorrow. No idea what I was doing. He started running through a lot more information than I could process at the time, but had no background in brewing. Most of my background was in sales. So coming here, it was like a whole new world. And he just kind of dumped information on me. He overloaded me with information over and over and over again. And eventually enough of it stuck where he could trust me to actually make his beer. Yeah, but there was a solid 6 months where my biggest job was grinding grain, cleaning kegs, cleaning up after a brew day. And then when I was really good, he would let me sit in on a brew day and relay all the information to him so he could do all the important stuff.
Nice.
And then kind of as time just progressed, I started taking on more and more roles. The more I was learning, it went from just cleaning after a brew day to running the brew day to kegging up, to kegging beer up from the fermenters, which is always a delicate situation because there you're dealing with changes of pressure, making sure that the kegs were full. Mm-hmm. At the time, we were doing everything manually. There was no automated anything. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of work that he slowly started to dump on me. I think I was so nervous the first time I did a 100, like it was a solo brew. It was just me. Sean was on vacation. I think it was the first vacation he had in years. Wow. And I'm like, hey, I really want to do this. He's like, yeah, screw it. Why not? It was the cream ale. And that sticks out to me because it was the lightest beer that we had to make. So if I screwed it up, it wasn't that big of a deal.
Okay, now this one was like 4.7 at its lightest, right? I think it was 4.7. I remember looking at that. It was the lightest beer that you had on the menu.
Yes. Now, that one in particular, I remember that cream ale being so low. That was not... That was not my first beer. That one ended up coming in right in the numbers, and I was so excited because I knew I did everything right. I was triple checking everything, even though I didn't need to.
But that's what we do.
Yeah, and to this day, it's funny because there's things like dry hopping that are so normal for me to do.
Okay, so before our last conversation on the last episode, I had no idea what the hell dry hopping was. I didn't know what any of this was, really. I mean, I'm going to learn it as we go along here. Dry hopping was a really cool concept. I had never known anything about it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm learning so much just
having this. So with the dry hopping, we end up trickle flowing CO2 through the fermenter just because CO2 is heavier than the oxygen. We don't want the oxygen to reach the beer. We basically want a bed of CO2 that we drop the hops into, and then the CO2 will actually, as you'll start a secondary fermentation reaction. The oxygen that's inside the hop pellets will start to expand, basically forcing the rest of the CO2 out through the airlock. But the biggest thing that I get worried about is contamination, because the second we open up that fermenter, I'm introducing whatever's in the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And that scares the hell out of me every time. But it's a healthy fear. I always think about, you know, my dad used to jump out of airplanes when he was in the Army. And the second that a jump master was confident and wasn't nervous was the second that he quit jumping out of airplanes. Because there should be a healthy fear in some things. And every time we open that fermenter, even if it's just a dry hop or to pull hops out, you're possibly risking contaminating that beer and ruining the entire batch.
Gotcha.
So if you're not particular about it, it can go sideways quick.
Yeah. Now, you were talking about some of the other drinks that are coming down the pike. Now, can we elaborate a little bit or is this something that...
So we got the working on the Saison. I'm trying to think, which ones do we have that we actually have finalized recipes for? The wheat wine is the one I'm the most excited about.
That one.
It really is.
I had a couple of tastes of that, and oh my God, the flavor on that is just incredible.
It's not overly bitter. It's, I mean, it is a solid 9.8% alcohol. Really low on the IBUs, and it's smooth.
The flavor is so balanced. I would have said you don't have to add anything to it, but you said it's going to age out, and some of the
flavors
will change.
So that's one of the things, is that if in the process of aging out the beer, you're actually changing some of the hop flavors in there. Mm-hmm. The longer it sits around, the more muted some of those hop flavors get. That's part of the reason why, like the Bosch Triple, we age out for so long, mm-hmm. is because we're introducing so many hops to it. We want that to balance back out. By aging it out, you're able to kind of break down the long-chain alcohols, the fusel alcohols that are in there, basically into something that your tongue doesn't register as sharp alcoholic taste.
But the thing is, that wasn't a sharp taste. That was such a nice flavor.
It was sharp enough for me to notice, which means that it's going to be sharp enough for somebody to after one glass, be done.
Okay.
I want them to be able, if they want 36 ounces of that, I want them to be able to have the 36 ounces of that.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense.
Now, because it's also so light in the IBUs, I'm really hoping it goes fairly quick. The lower the IBU number, typically the shorter the shelf life.
Okay. Now, before we go on with this, we had kind of touched on the difference between this one and a barley wine.
Yes.
Okay, so kind of elaborate on that a little bit if you could.
Yeah. So barley wines are typically a lot more malt forward. They'll use things like a crystallized malt, which is a slightly roasted malt. They might use something like a Vienna or even some aromatic, some adjunct grains that will incorporate a little bit of a caramelized type of flavor, a little bit on the sweeter notes. And that's one of the issues that I kind of have with most barley wines, is they focus more on those sweet notes.
And that was one thing I didn't like about a barley wine, was that it was too sweet.
And that's, I mean, by design, I mean, it's supposed to be kind of like that for a traditional barley wine.
So a barley wine is more similar to a mead?
Yeah, I'd attribute it. It's a lot closer to a mead than I'd say, okay. Definitely the wheat wine is. The wheat wine, you're looking at a color similar to a Saison, so a light straw, golden color to it. Again, we don't ferment or we don't filter our beers, because for me, I want those proteins that are floating around in there. If we dry hop it, I want some of the bits and pieces, if you will.
A little bit of the flavor that's going to punch you in the face.
Because it changes the mouthfeel.
Yeah,
it makes it to where it's a fuller beer without, I guess, feeling fake.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, after you have enough, look at the difference between a hazy IPA and an IPA of the same exact thing. Is it Dogfish Head that does that?
Dogfish Head, yeah.
They've got a hazy IPA, and they've got basically the same exact IPA that they filter out. And there is such a difference between the two. And some people would prefer, the filtered out beer. Other people prefer something that's, got a little bit more to it.
Yeah, a little more flavor, a little more beef to it, basically.
Yes, I mean, and I'm kind of more in that camp than I am having a filtered out beer. Just because that mouthfeel is so integral to it. So I don't know, with the wheat wine, similar to the cream ale, you get this light creamy flavor to it, or mouthfeel to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so different, but it's not like an assault on your senses.
No, it's not. It is actually very nice. It was a very smooth flavor, very well balanced.
So, by aging it out, not only are we going to get rid of that the fusel alcohols, but we'll also kind of mute down some of those hops. And that's my fear, is that if you mute it down too much, then they're not going to be as fragrant. It's not going to be as balanced as it is now, flavor-wise, in 6 weeks.
Okay. So you have to have a constant tester. I'm volunteering. I'm volunteering as that guy right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it has to be monitored very closely, obviously.
Yeah.
This is still an experimental.
This one is. This is our first round at it. And, you know, similar to, I think, every beer that I've done, I just kind of take meticulous notes as to what the differences are. Hey, did I add on 10 minutes onto this boil? Or did I have a stuck sparge? You know, did I end up having to dry hop this because the flavors weren't, you know, popping nearly as much as they should have? Did I have to add any type of dex or turbo to it? You know, just all these little things, because
everything has a different nuance.
Oh yeah, I can go back now. I think we're going back the last 8 batches. I think my cutoff point. Of, say, the cream ale, for instance. I could pull up the last 8 batches of cream ale that we did and say our specific gravity readings are closer to batch number 4. I can go back to batch number 4. Okay, what did I do? Where did it come out? What can I do different now? And a lot of that really is kind of the chemistry on the fly aspect. Okay. And it could be, you know, the water had a different pH. Or for some reason, I let this one go for an extra 15 minutes in the boil. Or for this one, I didn't need to add sugar. Or, you know, it could be any number of things, but it gives me a reference point to go back to. In the experimental phase, let's wing it and figure out if it's good.
Yeah, let's try this and see how it goes.
And see, that's a lot of where, you know, while I do a lot of the physically making the beer, things like this is where I bounce the ideas off of Sean. You know, or there's times like for a while there, we didn't make the Prince of Wales Porter because of the rye. Rye beers typically have to be kept at a colder temperature in the cooler than any other beers, otherwise they start to foam up.
Okay.
And this time, like, all right, we're going to try it again, but how are we going to do it different so it doesn't foam up? We finally kind of fine tweaked all the little things to where, you know, this porter, I don't think we've had an issue with it at all.
Nice.
And it's things like that that I kind of really rely on Sean, because he has a lot more of the expertise on seeing. He's seen more.
And he knows how to rebalance.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one day I wish my palate was as refined as his is.
So he's like a really well-trained mechanic.
Yes, yes.
In, to put it another way, he's like a well-trained mechanic. He can hear a noise or taste one little nuance, say,
yep,
for instance, and know how to adjust everything to make it run smoothly.
Right. And, you know, there's things that we kind of bounce ideas back and forth, you know, and I think a lot of our conversations, both of us are kind of trying to find reasons why the other person's idea wouldn't be that. You know, say that, so say a beer is coming out too sweet. But depending on what that type of sweetness I could say, hey, this is when I added the sugar. I added it at the 30 minutes instead of adding it at the 60 minute during the boil. And he was like, all right, well, you know, that should have already dissolved. It can't be that. You should have eaten that. Let's go back to the grains, and we'll just kind of go back, bounce it back and forth.
Where the science comes in.
Yeah, I mean, and eventually we'll come up with an idea that neither one of us can shoot holes in. It's like, all right, well, maybe that's it.
And yep.
I will say that is one of the things that I've always appreciated about working here, is that there is a lot of free floating ideas.
And that's cool, and I can really appreciate that, because there are so many things that I've kind of bounced off of you. And, you know, the wheat wine is actually one thing that I'm loving.
Yeah.
I've kind of talked about barley wines in the past with you, and, you know, I've asked you about ciders and seltzers, and you said, well, he's not going to do that.
The seltzers, I'd have to take his brewer's card for that. I already told him that's coming down the line. If if he decides that we're going to make a seltzer, I'm going to need his brewer's card. And there might be a 24-hour ban on my brew house.
But it's something that I kept asking you about, because I love ciders. I like seltzers. I love the ads is my absolute favorite right now. The Shut the Fuck Up Donna is right there with that ads.
Yep.
There's quite a few beers here that I really do enjoy. You got the Cruel Mistress, the Boom Boat Ruckus, the Mark V. They're all, in the past, I've been 10 plus on the ABV.
Let me know if you can tell that they're 10 plus until after you've had a couple.
No, I couldn't.
Because there's a problem.
My wife can attest to that.
There's a really big problem if you start feeling that 10% after two sips. If it's got that sharp taste, that means I did something wrong. And I want to know about it. That is actually one of the things that I always like about talking with customers is, you know, if there's a problem with the beer, let me know. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no reason to keep it to yourself. If you don't like something, great, tell me why you don't like it.
Yeah.
If
somebody can explain in detail why it doesn't taste right.
It doesn't even have to be in great detail. I'll help you narrow it down.
Yeah, there you go.
Perfect. Because depending on what flavors you're tasting, it could just be a palate thing. It could be, you know, hey, that's not the right style of beer for you. Or there could be something wrong with the beer. And if there's something wrong with the beer, I can't do anything about your palate. I can't do anything about, you know, what you prefer to drink.
Yeah, exactly.
But I can change the beer if there's something wrong with it.
If there is anything wrong with it, you said you dispose of it right away.
Yeah, I don't. That is one thing that we really don't mess around with is if it doesn't meet the standards that Sean has for the brewery, the expectations are there. And if it falls short of that, it falls short and it's gone.
Yep. There's no two questions about
it. Nope. There's really, I mean, I get sad every time that it goes, that it, you know, I end up having to.
Me too, because I want to be there with my growlers. And I'm like, hey, come on, just get, come on.
But, you know, and again, it doesn't happen too often. We've kind of dialed in our production plan kind of to meet the needs of what the town. You know, during the off season, I slow down production, kind of space it out. We go with some heavier beers that have a little bit longer of a shelf life.
Mm-hmm.
And with it being winter and fall, I mean, a lot of people prefer something a little bit heavier to go with the rainy days.
Warm the blood.
You know? Yep, exactly.
Now, I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Blueberries. Sorry, go ahead.
I'll put you on the spot here and say, what was Baden Street's very first beer?
Very first beer is Boom Boat Ruckus.
It was the Boom Boat.
Boom Boat Ruckus is what started this brewery.
No kidding.
So now this is a story that, you know, obviously I came into working here a year after Sean had been open. So this is a story and how it was relayed to me. So Sean he'd been doing some home brewing and he had his stout. Good stout.
Very good stout, I gotta say.
High ABV stout. Well, he had a friend over and they were sitting there drinking his stout. And, you know, the more they were drinking, the more the good idea fairy came out. And
I
guess Sean's friend, they said, hey, you should start a brewery. And he's like, you know what, this is good beer. I should start a brewery. And that started the wheels turning. Now, Sean had been doing homebrew for a long period of time before that. So he kind of had a rough idea of what beers he wanted. And he is very meticulous about how his business model is. The man's got 6,000 different degrees, and there's times that I still get lost in certain conversations with him.
I've only had like 3 conversations with him, so.
And which is really funny because he's a really down-to-earth person. Mm-hmm. But if you start, somebody should go ask him about some, just give him a philosophy question. That's always a fun one. He loves talking philosophy. But yeah, he started looking at, you know, different spaces. He started looking at, you know, what it would require for him to open up the brewery. And I don't know exactly what kind of gave him that final shove. Possibly boredom. I mean, I have no clue.
Well, I think curiosity is probably what did
yes.
it. Because he knew he had a great product.
Oh, yeah.
He knew he could market it. And look what he's done. I mean, you guys...
He started out with 4 beers. And now we have, I want to say, 10 on tap. Sorry, 9 plus a non-alcoholic option.
Yeah.
And, you know, the recipes for 35-ish... I say ish because I have to go back upstairs and actually do some math, and I don't like counting. I just did inventory earlier, and that's too much math.
There are some really cool things coming down the pike, like this wheat wine. Is this actually considered a wine or is this still a beer?
It's still technically a beer. You could actually make wines. It's more of a style than anything. Normally they end up with wheat and barley wines, normally end up with the range, if I remember right, 9 to 12%.
One that was a 14, so maybe that was.
There are ways that you can get that ABV up. The downside is the higher that ABV, the more fusel alcohols you've got, the more you've got to age it out.
And the one I had was very, wasn't tart. It was very, tasted like alcohol.
Just yeah. So my guess
right
with that
in the front is just like getting slammed with alcohol. And like, ah.
Yeah. They didn't age that out nearly enough.
No, they didn't.
And it could be, you know, there's a lot of reasons why some people don't age it out. It could be, you know, just a beer that they need to turn and burn. You know, they need to get it out, get something out on tap right away, and that's just hanging out. There's been a couple of times that we've looked at it and like, hey, do we pull something that we have aging out a week or two early just to fill a line in the hole? Or
sacrifice that quality?
Yeah,
because you know exactly how long some of these have to age.
It's really funny because we have the same conversation every time. I mean, it happens a few times a year. We'll sit down like, well, you know, I'll sit there and talk to Donna, the taproom manager, and I'm like, hey, I know that you're going to have this empty line for a while. I've got this beer, but it's still aging out. It still has another week or two. Do you want to put it on tap? Do you not want to put it on tap? Do you just want to have an empty line? The majority of the time, we end up with an empty line because we don't want to put out a beer that's not ready.
Yeah, you don't want to put out something that's going to be subpar.
Yeah.
And I completely understand that.
Now, there are times that I think during COVID, we put one beer on a little bit early. But that at the time we were going to a to-go method, and so all of it were growlers and cans. And for that first week, you know, we flat out told people, hey, this wasn't quite done, but it is available if you want it.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the things that I like about here is that you can come in and, you know, as long as you're 21 and don't have an alcohol restriction on your ID.
There you go.
You can come in and sample a beer. I mean, if we've got it on tap, take a sample of it. I mean, how else are you going to know if you want, you know, a pint of it now, or if you want to take a growler or a crowler home? I mean, you're talking, you know, 32, 64 ounces of beer that if you don't like it, you're just wasting.
Yeah, if you don't like it, you're not going to be happy.
No.
So the good thing is that they will give you a taste of, you know, whatever you want.
Or, you know, the one thing that I always like when, as a bartender, I don't like doing it because I really suck at filling up the really small glasses. But come in and get a flight.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
You can
sample, what is it, six at a time?
Four.
Four at a time.
But we can do one of everything that we have on tap, and you're still within your 36 ounces.
Yep.
Now, with that, you're able to get, you know, a little bit more than just a kind of a sip of it, a little bit more of a flavor profile. You're able to drink a little bit more of it.
A little bit more than a mouthful, for a couple of sips at least.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's 4 ounces. Most of the samples are typically about an ounce and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that there's some breweries over in I don't know, somewhere in Southeast. I'll think of it later on. That they refuse to do flights. It's either you're gonna get a pint or you're not.
Oh,
you're either going to get a whole pint because their mentality
place
is,
like, I'll see you later.
Their mentality is you can't really appreciate a beer until you have a full pint of it.
No, that's not true. Because you have to be able to take a taste, say, hey,
I was going to say,
like that.
I will argue with them all day long because if you put a sour in front of me, there's a very good chance that 4 ounces is the most I want.
Exactly. Now, you've also got a sour brewing right now, right?
Yes. So we've got the Redhead Siren, a raspberry Imperial Sour going on right now.
The Imperial Sour, I like that.
Yes. And this one is going to be a little bit more on the raspberry front. So
this
typically
one
we'll take
great flavor to it. I mean, the raspberry
really,
really pops.
So normally we'll take kind of a generic wheat grain bill Let it go through primary fermentation. So we'll have the base ABV in there. Mm-hmm. I want to say this one's only 10 IBUs, might be 12, somewhere in that range. Really low. And then we'll introduce lactobacillus and Brettanomyces. Both of them are wild yeast strains. The lacto will create a little bit more of that tart flavor when you think of sours. You know, think Warheads.
Yeah.
That lactic acid. That's. And then the Brett will come out a little bit more like a farmhouse, funky, complex. There are so many different ways to describe Brettanomyces, and none of them are accurate.
Yeah.
Because it is such a unique flavor. But when you drop those in with normally 45 pounds-ish of raspberry puree, you'll end up with, you know, kind of a light, tart raspberry flavor. This one, we doubled the amount of raspberry that went into it. So that raspberry is a lot more on the forefront.
Now, this one I liked a lot more than that first one because
yes.
I had the first one. It was really good, but the raspberry flavor just wasn't quite enough.
It was subtle.
It was very subtle, yes.
So one of the things that we're always cognizant of is if we're going to fruit a beer, we don't want it to be all syrup. We don't want that, you know, how many times...
You have to have the natural flavor.
Yeah. How many times you go up to, you know, say somebody has like a blueberry pilsner. Blueberry is an extremely popular flavor.
You can't
use an
extract.
And all you taste is blueberry.
Yeah, you can't.
And I'm like, all right, that tastes fake. I don't want that. I want that natural flavor. So with the Redheaded Siren, it tastes like a fresh raspberry. And that's what we want.
And that was really nice.
I mean, we want you to smell the raspberry. We want you to be able to see that light red tinge to it. But it's not like kind of a, I don't know, Gatorade red.
Yeah.
You don't want it to be like this fake dyed whatever. You want just the natural colors of the raspberry. I mean, and by doing a lighter wheat grain bill, you're ending up with like this really light beer in the beginning, so the raspberry can shine a bit more.
Now, would this be considered a beer, or would this be considered...
This is still a beer.
It is still a beer.
So in order for it to be considered a beer, you kind of need a few things. The grains have to be incorporated into it for the sugars. Now, on a home brewing scale, you can do malt extracts. And some of the big guys think Anheuser-Busch, you know, some of those.
Budweiser for the layperson.
Somebody who wants toilet water. If you think about those places, they'll use some extracts just because it's cheaper.
Yeah.
They don't have to deal with disposal of grains, things along those lines. You can get a consistent product.
They're looking for a specific flavor and a specific percentage.
And then you're going to need yeast and hops. If you've got those basic things, that's what you need for the beer.
Okay, so one thing I was told was if you're making a beer, if you add any kind of fruit flavor to it, it is no longer a beer. It becomes like a cider or a wine.
It's still a beer.
This is the argument that I've heard is if you add any other kind of fruit flavors to it, other than the hops and the even the barley,
it becomes a fruited beer. And it say you're going to a beer competition, you're getting a new category. That kind of goes into when we were talking about the BJCP, you know, that app I was talking about. Mm-hmm. All those subsections, a lot of those are, you know, what happens if you're adding fruit to it?
Okay.
What happens if you're adding, you know, a different yeast to it?
Is there any plan to do like a pumpkin beer for fall time? I'm only curious.
My wife would be happy, and again, I would have to take Sean's brewer's card. No, we're not jumping into the pumpkin spice anything yet. To date, I have had one good pumpkin beer, and I could have one of them. That was it.
I like the Elysian. They had an Elysian stout pumpkin.
Yeah.
That was okay.
But I don't want just an okay beer, though. I want something that you know, jumps out. And I mean, and don't get me wrong, the what was it, King Don's Imperial Pumpkin Ale out of I believe that was a Catawba Brewing in High Point, North Carolina.
Okay.
I remember all that because it was to date the only good pumpkin beer I've had. With that being said, I don't want something that people can only have one of.
Yeah.
I want them to be able to keep coming back for it. And pumpkin has been, it is a lot like those seltzers.
Yeah. it may be a passing.
So Sean was in the Army. I was in the Marines. Kyle was in the Coast Guard. The three people who are making beer all have military service, and none of us could live up to the fact that we made a seltzer or a pumpkin beer.
Understood. No. That would almost be like pulling somebody's man card.
Yep. Yep. For me, I think it'd be a little bit harder to take that from Sean. But
now, no. I only had to ask because I've been curious because I've had several different kinds of pumpkin beers. Mm-hmm. Some of them were good. Some of them were not so good.
I can tell you that certain styles work a lot better for the pumpkin beers than others. There's various ways that you can introduce the pumpkin flavor into it. Whether it's you want to do an artificial, you can introduce it into the mash like you would any of the grains. You could.
Talking to you homebrewers here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Talk to the homebrewers. By the way, the easiest way to get the pumpkin puree is go buy a can. But that also does change a little bit of the mouthfeel as to whether or not certain yeast strains will mix with that very well. And then you want to talk about adding spices. You can't just add a pumpkin spice to it.
No, that has to be a lot of very specific measurements.
You have to kind of be careful about how you're doing it when you're adding it in. If you're making a heavier beer that you're planning on aging out, how do those spices interact over time?
Not only that, you have to consider the sugar.
Yes. And then you can even go to things. So there's a reason why we don't use cinnamon in any of our beers.
Okay.
Cinnamon would have been a great addition to that beer to Noel. We won't use it.
Okay.
There's certain things that, certain spices, certain lactose. All right. To make a milk stout, you introduce lactose to basically milk sugar. It's a non-fermentable sugar that increases the sweetness on the tongue and changes the mouthfeel. It's great for certain beers. It is phenomenal. What if you're lactose intolerant? I'm just saying. And, you know, unless we advertise, hey, this has lactose in it, somebody could be in for a very long night.
Yep.
And not the good kind.
Not the fun kind.
So same thing with cinnamon. You know, that could give people headaches.
Yep. And there have been several people I know who are actually allergic to cinnamon.
Yeah, I mean, and you can go into, you know, a lot of where cinnamon comes from, and there's a lot of controversy over that, what type of cinnamon you're getting and how you're getting it, and that's a story for a whole different day.
Another conversation.
Yeah.
So speaking of which, I hate to cut this short, but
yeah,
you know, this has been really great talking to you, but we're going to have to continue this next week.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
hopefully I'll be able to get Donna in here.
That would be awesome.
Maybe she can talk a little bit about the magic that she does.
Yeah, a little bit of the marketing.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to add?
Again, I really want to reiterate, if you have any questions with, you know, if you want to get into homebrewing or anything that we have going on down here, you know, stop by, ask us. I would love to work with some homebrewers and, you know, help them fine tweak some recipes, help them, you know, if they're having issues with their equipment, if they're not getting the same results out of things, you know, I'd love to sit there and talk with you.
There you go. So there you hear it, folks. You got any questions, contact Mike, Donna, Kyle, Tanea, yeah, or Sean.
Yep.
Here at Bodden Street Brewery in Ketchikan.
Cool.
So this has been a lot of fun. Mikey, thank you for being on, and I guess we'll talk to you again next week.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, everybody be safe out there. We'll talk to you next time. It's Horror After Hours signing off.